Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as The New York Times, The News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. It was on this day, back in 1984, that Michael Jackson went into surgery in Los Angeles. What was the reason for this surgery? Was it A, to repair his scalp from his hair having been set on fire? Was it B, to pump his stomach for pharmaceutical drugs? Was it C, to lighten the color of his skin? Or was it D, to cosmetically tighten his face, especially around his nose and eyes? Michael Jackson's 1984 surgery. What was that for, anyway? And question number two. It was on this very day, back in 1959, that Dolly Parton released her very first single. What was the title of her first release? Was it A, Hound Dog? Was it B, Puppy Love? Was it C, Jolene? Or was it D, Here You Come Again? Dolly Parton's first. What was that anyway? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of April 18th. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1945, that the musical Carousel, based on Molnar's Lilhorn, opened at the Majestic Theater in New York City. The 2018 Broadway revival of Carousel lasted for 6 months, closing on September 16, 2018. The original Broadway production, however, which opened in 1945, ran for 890 performances. The original Carousel opening today, 1945. And it was 90 years ago today, 1935, that Your Lucky Hit Parade was first broadcast on radio. It aired for 24 years. The Lucky Hit Parade was the first TV adaptation of the long-running radio show Your Hit Parade, which was sponsored by Lucky Strike Cigarettes. The TV version maintained the Lucky name as a direct reference to its sponsor, according to the Television Academy. The radio show also sometimes featured an extra song called Lucky Strike Extra, further reinforcing the cigarette connection, says the Radio Hall of Fame. Vivaldi's Four Seasons, Spring, introduces our classical music news. This is a continuation of the article we started last week. He rode his motorbike naked into the village. 15 very badly behaved composers. From Mozart to Peter Warlock, here are 15 composers who stepped out of line, socially, sexually, or just with too much motorbike-based nudity. This is published in Classical Music, BBC Music Magazine, 25th of March, 2025. Here at BBC Music Magazine, we are consistently reminded how composers, past and present, operate on a different creative plane from us normal beings. And which of us, when enthralled to a sublime Sibelius symphony or miraculous Mozart mass, haven't concluded that such genius can only come from some sort of superhuman presence? Allow us to break the spell for a while. Of course, the great composers were all human. In fact, in terms of their faults and foibles, many of them were all too human. Vanity, greed, recklessness, temper, lust, you name it. As a collective group, there is scarcely a vice that composers haven't embraced in one way or another. By and large, most kept their unacceptable side fairly low-key. Some, however, really did push the boat of bad behavior out with gusto, such as these badly behaved composers. Last week we covered Ludwig van Beethoven and Jean Sibelius. Today we start with Henry Purcell. Purcell's bad behavior? Is another composer who liked a tipple. For 1900s Helsinki and Sibelius, read 1680s London and Henry Purcell. A more than regular in the English capital's inns, Purcell's list of compositions includes a fair number of body drinking songs. Sadly, however, the habit of coming home late, drunk, and disorderly may well have proved his downfall. His wife simply locked her wayward husband out one chilly evening. The bout of pneumonia that soon followed proved to be fatal. And then there's at number four, Gabriel Fauré. Bad behavior? He was a bit of a rake. Maybe Purcell would have done better to have simply carried on drinking through the night. This is just what Gabriel Fauré once did while working as a church organist in Rennes in the 1860s, turning up for the morning service still dressed in his evening tie and tails. The clergy, who already took a stern view of Fauré's tendency to pop out of the organ loft for a cigarette during the sermon, were none too impressed. Fauré also crops up in our list of bed-hopping composers. Though married with two children, he had a series of affairs, perhaps most famously with a singer and the wife of a wealthy banker, and later Claude Debussy's mistress and second wife. Their passionate affair provided inspiration for some of Fauré's most beautiful songs. Coming in at number five is Thomas Weelkes. Bad behavior? Drinking, swearing, and, sorry, urinating. Fauré's organ loft antics seem positively saintly when compared to a list of misdemeanors that got Thomas Weelkes the sack from Chichester Cathedral in 1616. Already in trouble for urinating on the dean during evensong a couple of years earlier, Weelkes was finally given his marching orders when his habit of being drunk and swearing loudly in services got too much. Extraordinarily, he was soon reinstated, and despite there being no let-up in his love of either bottle or blasphemy, continued in the post until his death in 1623. He is worthy of remembering for his beautiful music as much as for his antics. Coming in at number six is Nicolas Gombert. Bad behavior, sexual misconduct. Few composers have found their career trajectory stopped in its tracks as suddenly as Gombert, who, until 1540, held the prestigious post of Master of the Children in the Royal Chapel of Holy Roman Emperor Charles V, abusing his position by foisting his attention on an unwilling choirer, the master soon found his rowing skills being put to the test when he was sentenced to, quote-unquote, hard labor in the galleys. Being consigned below deck didn't seem to have affected Gombert's work as a composer. In fact, some of his finest music, much of it comes from the time of exile at sea, and he was eventually granted a pardon by the emperor. Finally today, number 7, Modest Mussorgsky. Bad behavior? Now, here was a serious drinker. That portrait is a warning to us all. Russian composer Modest Mussorgsky was a legendary tippler. In his case, the habits and mores of his particular social clique can probably share the blame. Drinking to excess was apparently considered somewhat de rigueur for those of Mussorgsky's age and social circle who wanted to adopt an anti-establishment stance. As one commentary noted, an intense worship of Bacchus was considered to be almost obligatory for a writer of that period. It was a showing off, a pose for the best people of the 1860s. Whatever the social context, we do know that Mussorgsky liked his drink, and indeed that on one occasion he spent an entire day and night in a St. Petersburg tavern of ill repute, in the company of other, well, let's call them bohemians. And in music research and technology, we have a book review. The book's name is The Musical Brain, What Students, Teachers, and Performers Need to Know. This is written by Lois Savard in Goodreads.com on the 30th of December, 2023. It's given 4.13 out of 5 possible stars. The album is... We make or listen to music for the powerful effect it has on our emotions, and we can't imagine our lives without music. Yet we tend to know nothing about the intricate networks that neurons create throughout our brains to make music possible. The Musical Brain, name of the book, explores fascinating discoveries about the brain and music, often told through the stories of musicians whose lives have been impacted by the extraordinary ability of our brains to learn and adapt. Neuroscientists have been studying musicians and the process of making music since the early 1990s and have discovered a staggering amount of information about how the brain processes music. There have been many books discussing neuroscience and music, but this is the first to relate the research in a practical way to those individuals who make or teach music. Research in mirror neurons, neuroplasticity, imaginary, learning, and memory, the musical abilities of babies, and the cognitive advantage of studying music can offer valuable insights into how and when we should begin the study of music, how we can practice and teach more effectively, how we can perform with greater confidence, and can help us understand why experiencing music together is so important in our lives. An accompanying website provides links to interviews, performance clips, demonstrations, photos, and essays involving the concepts or musicians discussed in the book. The Kindle edition is 286 pages long and was published on February 17, 2023 by Oxford University Press. And this book was recommended to this music review program by one of NCRS's regular listeners, Bill McClure. Thank you, Bill.
All that glitters is gold, and she's buying the stairway to heaven.
Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven introduces our rock and pop music news. People are only just realizing what Led Zeppelin's name really means. This is published in the DailyMail.com on the 12th of April, 2025, by Sophie Gable. Led Zeppelin is one of the most iconic rock and roll bands, but their name has eluded music fans for generations. The legend of the name goes back to when guitarist Jimmy Page pitched a new group to Keith Moon, the drummer for The Who. He suggested that the two join forces with Robert Plant, John Bonham, and John Paul Jones. Moon quipped that the band would go over like a lead balloon, joking that the group would fail. The phrase inspired the iconic name, except Page opted to spell lead like L-E-D so that it wouldn't be mispronounced as lead. A zeppelin is, of course, a type of cylindrical, gas-filled aircraft balloon named after its German inventor, Ferdinand von Zeppelin. Alas, the name was born, and the band soared to become the opposite of what their name suggested. Before they became Led Zeppelin, Page, Plant, Bonham, and Jones toured under the name New Yardbirds. They performed their first show at a converted gym used as a teen club in Denmark on September 7, 1968. They took their name at the time from a popular British blues band called the Yardbirds. Page toured with the Yardbirds and recruited the other three members when his first band fell through. He funded the band's first tour in Scandinavia, and after performing their last show in Oslo, Norway, they jetted back to London to record an album. Page revealed in a book titled Conversations with Jimmy Page that they arrived at the Atlantic record label with a tape in hand. We recorded the whole first album in a matter of 30 hours. That's the truth. I know, because I paid the bit, he said in the book. The band dropped their debut self-titled album the following year, which fittingly featured a black-and-white photo of a Zeppelin balloon on the cover. Led Zeppelin went on to become a humongous commercial success, dropping their quintessential song, the one playing in the background now, Stairway to Heaven, in 1971. The 8-minute rock ballad became known to be one of the most popular songs of all time, and the Rolling Stone ranked it 61 on a list of 500 greatest songs. The band was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and in 1995, and was bestowed the Lifetime Achievement Award at the Grammys in 2005. Tragically, Led Zeppelin announced they were breaking up in December 1980 after Bonham died. The group was set to embark on a tour when Bonham died from asphyxiation after he had choked while asleep.
Skyscrapers shine the sun so secretaries at the hot dog vendors. Cabs honk at the bicycle messengers. Rolling by.
And from Wilco's capital city to ours, this is the local music news. Dreamville Festival says more than 104,000 fans attended the fifth and final edition of this music event. This is published in ABC11.com on April the 10th, 2025.
You should stay.
Raleigh, North Carolina, WTVD. The final attendance numbers are in for the fifth and last Dreamville Festival. More than 104,000 people came out for last weekend's two-day event at Dorothea Dix Park in Raleigh. They hailed from all 50 states and represented more than 20 countries. This was the last Dreamville Music Fest as we know it, after J. Cole announced earlier this year that this year's festival would be the last in its current form. A new music festival is in development for next year. Organizers also plan to hold the new music festival inside Dix Park. On stage last Sunday, J. Cole elaborated and hinted at the plans to come. But I'm going to just let you know that our plan, this festival, will exist. It might not have a Dreamville Festival name on it, but we will be back with this feel, the rapper and Fayetteville native said. When you all out there, I don't know if you all feel it, but to me this feels like a cookout, a family reunion. There's so much love with this. I want to say thank you for all for making Dreamville Festival a massive success every year. We will be back, just in a newer form. The Greater Raleigh Convention and Visitors Bureau said last year Dreamville brought in $10.5 million each day in economic impact. As people visit, stay, and explore the city, it's not just downtown business seeing a boost. It's not just downtown hotels. That's hotels in the suburbs, Cary, North Raleigh, in West Raleigh, so pretty much all over the county. Those folks do have a tendency to get out. They shop in kind of the local districts that they're in there. Dine in those local districts, said Lauren Gold, vice president of the Greater Raleigh Convention and Visitors Bureau. So, how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this day, back in 1984, that Michael Jackson went into surgery in Los Angeles. What was the reason for this surgery? Was it A, to repair his scalp from his hair having been set on fire? Was it B, to pump his stomach for pharmaceutical drugs? Was it C, to lighten the color of his skin? Was it D, to cosmetically tighten his face, especially around his nose and eyes? Correct answer? Answer A, to repair his scalp from his hair having been set on fire. As noted in OnThisDay.com, it was back in 1984 today that Michael Jackson went into surgery in Los Angeles. Doctors performed scalp surgery to repair damage done after Jackson's hair caught fire during the filming of a Pepsi commercial on January 27th of this year, 1984. According to various news sources, here's a more detailed account. The incident? During the filming of a Pepsi commercial, pyrotechnics were set off too early, and sparks ignited Jackson's hair. He continued dancing down a step upstairs, initially unaware his hair was even on fire. The aftermath. Jackson was taken to the hospital where he received treatment for second and third degree burns. He also experienced intense migraines during the healing process. The impact? The incident is believed to have been a contributing factor to his later dependence on painkillers and the development of other health issues, including a period of near balding. Pepsi's response? Pepsi settled with Jackson out of court, and he donated the settlement to the Brotman Medical Center, which later named its burn center in his honor. He also later signed another endorsement deal with Pepsi. And the answer to our second question, it was on this very day back in 1959 that Dolly Parton released her very first single. What was the title of that first release? Was it A, Hound Dog, B, Puppy Love, C, Jolene, or D, Here You Come Again? Correct answer is answer B, Puppy Love. As noted in DollyParton.com, Dolly Parton released her first single, Puppy Love, at the age of 13 on Gold Band Records. Dolly wrote that song at the age of 11, along with her uncle Bill Owens. The lyrics showcase Dolly's ability, even at a young age, to write relatable songs. In this upbeat song, she sings about the hot and cold emotions of young love. Girl Left Alone, written by Dolly, her Aunt Dorothy, Joe Owens, and Uncle Bill Owens, appeared on Side B. Dolly and her grandmother, Rena Owens, took a 30-hour bus trip to the recording studio in Lake Charles, Louisiana, to record the songs. Remembering that fateful journey, Dolly said, "I don't think I'll ever forget the way the inside of that bus smelled. It was a combination of diesel fuel, naga hide, and people who were going places." Well, let's leave Dolly's first recording behind and close out today's program with one of her more recent recordings. So we go from Puppy Love to Head Over High Heels.
Put on my tight dress, hair teased on my head. I painted my lips red and my eyes like Adele. I step in my high shoes, cheeks flushed in rose rouge. I'm looking too cool, but you never can tell.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program's also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.
Red, I got a hot date tonight.